Today we're going to continue our series on turnarounds. We talked about how God turned around the lives of many people, including Ahab of all people, and Hezekiah and the Apostle Paul, all three of which had huge challenges in life, but God was able to turn them to victory. What we're going to talk about today is Ruth. She's a woman who, in her culture, had about everything going against her. We'll read some of the details, but she was a widow, living with two other widows, separated from her family in the middle of a famine. So most of the things that could go wrong in that culture went wrong. We know in no culture is it easy to be a widow, but at least in this culture it's very possible to be very competent and be very financially independent and really have a very decent life as a widow. In that culture, it really wasn't normal. If you didn't have a man in the family to handle your business, life was very difficult, if not impossible. It was just the culture at the time. So she had so much going against her, but as we'll see by the end of the book, she ends up in incredibly successful circumstances. And it's a great example and a great lesson about how we have to be aware of our circumstances, we have to deal with them, but we can't let them discourage us or stop us, because you could be like a Ruth who has such tough circumstances, and by looking to God and trusting God, it can turn around and be unbelievably successful. So let's go to the book of Ruth. Right after the books of Moses, ending with Deuteronomy, you have Joshua, Judges, Ruth. Of course, Joshua is the period when they enter the promised land after 40 years in the wilderness. And then Judges is the period immediately following that, where you don't have the patriarchs of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, followed by Moses. You don't have the transitional fellow Joshua, but you have all the other people that were the judges of Israel until you get into the period of the kings with David and Solomon and the other kings. So during this period of the Judges is where you have the book of Ruth. And in case you're not convinced that's when it happens, let's read the first verse. Now it came to pass in the days when the Judges ruled. So it was during that period. So sometime during the book of Judges this occurred. Now it came to pass in Ruth 1 verse 1, in the days when the Judges ruled, that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to visit in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. So this fellow goes with his wife and his two sons out of Bethlehem, the land of Judah, across the Jordan River into the country of Moab. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife was Naomi, and the name of his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites, so they were the tribe of Ephraim, even though they were living in the city of Bethlehem in the region of Judah. And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. So Naomi was a widow, but again, in that culture, she was okay because she had two grown sons to take care of her. And they, the two sons, verse 4, took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other is Ruth, and they dwelled there about 10 years. So they'd been in Moab for a while. They went to Moab. After they were there a while, the husband of Naomi died. Then her two sons got married, and they stayed another 10 years. So we don't know exactly how long they were here. Let's pick a number. Maybe 15 years they were there, but at least 10. They were there quite a while. And Mahlon and Chilion, verse 5, died also, both of them, and the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. So here they are in a foreign country where they had lived for 10 or 15 or 20 years, but all the men were dead, and now we have three widows, a mother and her two daughters-in-law. Then she arose, verse 6, with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread, because there had been a period of famine there in Judah, which was gone, and now they could go because the country again had bread. Wherefore, verse 7, she, Naomi, the older woman, went forth out of the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return unto the land of Judah. And Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, Go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. She basically was saying, I can't do anything for you, so just go back to your families and let them take care of you. Verse 9, the Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. And they said unto her, Surely we will return with thee unto thy people. These two young women had gotten used to being with Naomi and her family, and she wanted to go back with them. Now you may recall the Old Testament law says that if a man dies without child, one of his brothers is to marry the widow, and the first son is to carry on the name of the deceased husband. But there were no more sons in this family. There were only two, and they both died. So at this point, what's Naomi going to do? Get married again and have more sons? And these women are going to wait around 20 years or 15 years to marry one? It doesn't make any sense. So verse 11, and Naomi said, Turn again, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters. Verse 12, go your way, for I am too old to have an husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have an husband also tonight and should also bear sons, would you tarry or wait for them till they were grown? Would you stay for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, it grieveth me for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. She said, I can't do anything for you. I can't provide a husband for you. It's not possible. And they lifted up their voice and wept again. And Orpah, one of the two young women, kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. Ruth just held on, clung to her, wouldn't let go. And she said, Behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Return now after thy sister-in-law. And Ruth said, Entreat me not. Don't beg me to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. And where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. She decided to stay with her mother-in-law, Naomi, and with the God of Israel. She didn't want to go back to her family and the gods of Moab. She made a conscious decision to cast in her lot with the true God and his people, not knowing, having any idea what that would mean, not having any idea if, I mean, as we'll see, Naomi still had some property she owned, so they had a place to go to, but not having any idea whether they would have money, whether she would find a husband, whether she would ever have children. I mean, all the types of security she could get if she returned to her own family, she decided to put aside, having no idea what she'd get. She just made a simple decision to stick with the God of Israel and his people. That's all. And there are times in life where that's all you got. You've just got to make a decision which way you're going to go and then figure it out from there. See what doors God opens. And that's what Ruth did. Her sister-in-law, Orpah, decided to go back. And who knows? She might have had a very nice life. We don't know. Doesn't say anything else about her. But Ruth decided to stay with the true God and her deceased husband's family. Verse 17, Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death, part thee and me. And when she, Naomi, saw that she, Ruth, was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left, speaking unto her. Verse 19, So they two went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came to pass, when they were come to Bethlehem, that all the city was moved about them. And they said, Is this Naomi? And she said unto them, Call me not Naomi, but call me Mara, for the Lord the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. She had a bit of a renewed mind challenge. She wasn't seeing very many positives here. She was blaming all her problems on God. Well, it does work out. It gets better. Verse 21, I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Why then call ye me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me? So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of the barley harvest. Chapter 2. Now the plot starts to thicken, because there's a part here in the Old Testament law that you may not know, and I can't remember how much of this is actually in the law and how much just became the custom, which is if a man dies with no sons to carry on his name, if he doesn't have brothers to marry the widow, another family member, a cousin or some other family member, can take the responsibility of marrying the woman and carrying on the family name. So the plot thickens here. We'll see some other relatives. So Naomi, chapter 2, had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth, of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. So he was of the same family as Elimelech, so he's some kind of cousin. Don't know if he's first, second, third, fourth cousin, but he's somehow related. And he had a lot of money, and his name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, go, my daughter. Because, again, you may be familiar with this. The Old Testament law said that when you go through your fields and pick the grain, you can't go back a second time and pick up the part you missed. Because every time you go through, you won't get everything. You have to leave that for the widows, orphans, people traveling through town. That was part of their social support network. Like if I had an apple orchard, I'd go through and pick orchards, and then I couldn't go back a second time and make sure I didn't miss any. Any I missed the first time had to be left. And that's the way it was here, picking grain. So that was a common accepted custom. And Ruth, being the young woman, said, you know, I will go out and see what I can find for grain. And, you know, I'll try to get us some food. Perfectly normal. And she, Naomi, the older woman, said unto her, go, my daughter. And she went, verse 3, and came and gleaned. That's the term they use for picking up the leftover grain, gleaning. She came, went, and came, verse 3, and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And her hap, means the situation, was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. Isn't that funny? She just happened to stumble onto the field owned by her late husband's relative, Boaz. And behold, Boaz, verse 4, came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, the Lord bless thee. Then said Boaz unto his servant that was set over the reapers, sort of his foreman, whose damsel is this? And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, it is the Moabitess damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, verse 7, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued, even from the morning until now, that she tarried a little in the house. Then said Boaz unto Ruth, so he goes up to her and says, verse 8, hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast or close by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have not I charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? And when thou art athirst, go unto the vessels and drink of that which the young men have drawn. In other words, he said, I'll take care of you. You come, stay in my fields. You'll be protected. You'll have water to drink and plenty to harvest. Then, verse 10, she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto him, why have I found grace or favor in thine eyes, that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? And Boaz answered, verse 11, and said unto her, it hath been fully showed me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity, or where you were born, and art come unto a people which thou knewest not heretofore. The Lord, verse 12, recompense or repay thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. See, she had come to trust in the Lord God of Israel. So he just said, may the Lord repay you mightily because you're trusting in him. Verse 13, then she said, let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for that thou hast comforted me, for that thou hast spoken friendly unto thine handmaid, though I be not like unto one of thine handmaidens. I'm a Moabite. I'm a foreigner. I come from a background of idolatry, worshiping false gods. You don't have no reason to have to be nice to me, but you are. And Boaz said unto her at mealtime, verse 14, come thou hither and eat of the bread and dip thy morsel in the vinegar. And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched corn, and she did eat and was sufficed and left. And when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves and reproach her not. Now let her take the first cut instead of the leftovers. And let fall also, verse 16, let fall also some of the handfuls on purpose for her, and leave them that she may glean them and rebuke her not. Verse 17, so she gleaned in the field until even and beat out that she gleaned, and it was about an ephah of flour. Big, big bunch of flour. Of barley, sorry. And she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she gleaned, and she brought forth and gave to her that she had reserved after she was sufficed. Everything was left after she'd eaten. And her mother-in-law said unto her, where hast thou gleaned today? And where wroughtest thou? Where did you work? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of thee. And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought, and said, the man's name with whom I wrought today, or worked today, is Boaz. And Naomi, who knew the family, was pretty amazed. Verse 20, Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, blessed be he of the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. And Naomi said unto her, the man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen, a near kinsman, a close cousin. Verse 21, and Ruth the Moabitess said, he said unto me also, thou shalt keep fast or near by my young man until they have ended all my harvest. And Naomi said unto Ruth her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, and that they meet thee not in any other field. So she kept fast or close by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of barley harvest and a wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. So things are already looking up. They've gotten back to Bethlehem in Judah. They're back, presumably living in the property that Naomi owned still. And they're getting a lot of food. Much more than you'd normally get gleaning. And she's gotten the favor of a very well-to-do relative. Chapter 3. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, my daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? So Naomi's thinking, I'm going to marry you off. Verse 2, and now is not Boaz of our kindred with whose maidens thou wast? Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor. So after they harvest the grain, they go through what they call threshing it, which often included having the oxen walk over the grain to knock the kernels of grain loose from the husks. It was called a threshing floor, and they're going to be doing that. Verse 3, watch thyself therefore. Oh, and then after they, and often the threshing floors were on the edge of town, then after the oxen had tread on it to knock the husks loose from the grain, they would put it in their aprons and sort of throw it up in the air, and the wind would blow the chaff, which was very light, away, and the grain, which was heavy, was dropped down. Quite a process. I'm sure they have machines in Iowa that do that automatically now. They probably have for a very long time, but at the time, that was the way they did it. They had to knock the chaff off, and then they had to throw it up in the air and let the chaff blow away, leaving the hard grain. It took a lot to get a loaf of bread. Now you just go to Food Lion. Or any other store you want. Okay. So he's winnowing in the threshing floor. Verse 3, wash thyself, therefore, and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor, but make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be when he lieth down that thou shalt mark the place while he shall lie, and they shall go in and uncover his feet and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. So you see, the end of the meal, they would drink. Threshing floors are in a high, rocky place. I guess we talked about that. And women generally weren't allowed at night in the threshing floor. And the owner would come and sit on a pile of corn in the corner. And the fact that she lay down at his feet was a sign of surrender. She was asking him to redeem her or marry her. And she would ask him to spread his mantle over her. And in doing so, he'd show protection, promising to marry her. Boaz is often referred to as the kinsman redeemer because he was a kinsman through marriage of Ruth. And what he redeemed her from was widowhood, which again, in that culture, was a sort of a cursed situation. Being a widow was not good, and not having sons was not good, and she was both. So again, that's very acceptable in our culture, as it should be, but in that culture, neither one was an acceptable situation. So she came, at the end of verse 7, uncovered his feet and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight, verse 8, that the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, "Who art thou?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt or mantle over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." You know, in other words, and when you lay a garment over somebody, it's a sign of protection. It's a sign that you're going to protect and help that person. So that's what she was asking for. She's asking for the protection of him marrying her. And he said, verse 10, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch that thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest. For all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And now it is true that I am thine near kinsman, howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I." See, there is a pecking order. If there was a widow in the family, the first person who had the responsibility to marry her would be the brother of the deceased. And then if that person was deceased, whoever was the next nearest relative, maybe he was a first cousin and Boaz was a second cousin, I don't know. But this nearer relative had the responsibility and choice to marry her, and if he didn't, then Boaz was next in line. So Boaz clearly had this figured out. And he said, verse 13, "Tarry this night, wait, and it shall be in the morning that if he, the other kinsman, will perform unto thee the part of a kinsman," meaning doing his duty to redeem you from widowhood and marry you and provide protection for you and a way to carry on your deceased husband's name, "well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of a kinsman to thee, as the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning." And she lay at his feet. She lay at his feet until the morning. And she rose up before one could know another. And she said, "Let it not be known that a woman came into the floor." You don't want word getting around. We got women at the threshing floor at night. Also he said, verse 15, "Bring the veil that thou hast upon thee, and hold it up." And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley, and laid it on her, and she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "Who art thou, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done to her. And she said, "These 6 measures of barley gave he me, for he said to me, 'Go not empty unto thy mother-in-law.'" Then she, Naomi, the mother-in-law, said, "Sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall, for the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day." And there are a lot of times in life where you just have to do that. You just have to sit and wait. You pray, but you've done what you can do, and doing any more wouldn't be productive. And Naomi knew that. She said, "You've done what you can do, you're just going to have to sit and wait and see what Boaz does." And that's a big key in life. Because there's so many times in life what you're doing and how things end up are dependent on what other people decide to do. Or at least you can't make your next move until you see what the other people will do. And there's no use sweating about it. Just do what you can and pray. There's that little saying, not in the Bible, "You do your best and God will do the rest." And that's true when you're praying and expecting Him to. So that's what Naomi counseled Ruth very wisely to do. Just sit tight and see what happens. Then, chapter 4, verse 1, "Then went Boaz up to the gate and sat him down there. And the gate of the city is where the elders sat. It's where the business was done. Today it'd be the courthouse or some other place where the elders of the city would go to, or the city hall, maybe the town council. That's where they go to conduct business. But here was the gate of the city. So Boaz went up to the gate and sat him down there. And behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, unto whom he said, Ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down. And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, Sit down here. And they sat down. And that's how the business was conducted. They would conduct their business, and the other elders would listen as witnesses. And if a decision had to be made, they would adjudicate, and they'd come to a deal. Very simple. Perhaps better, perhaps worse, but definitely quicker than the way we handle legal issues today. So that's the way it was done. And he said, verse 3, unto the kinsman, Naomi. This is what Boaz said to his kinsman. Naomi, that has come again out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land, which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advise thee, saying, Buy it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me that I may know, for there is none to redeem it beside thee, and I am after thee. In other words, so Boaz told this fellow, Naomi came back, she's selling some land, you're the first in line, do you want to buy it? If you don't, I'll buy it. And he, the other kinsman, said, I will redeem it. Ah, but here's the catch. Verse 5, then says Boaz, what day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must also buy it of Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance. You've heard of there being liens on land. You know, you get something along with it, come water rights, or, you know, you've got to pay off this something if you buy this. And, well, this one came with a wife. We're not used to that in our real estate transactions. Very few houses come with a wife. Sometimes they come with a dog you can't get to leave, but they never come with a wife. Well, this one came with a wife, Ruth. So he's telling the guy, you can have the land, but it also partly belongs to Ruth, and to get it, you got to marry her. That's part of the deal. And the kinsman said, verse 6, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar my own inheritance. And I'm not quite sure what he's talking about, but he definitely doesn't like the idea of having a Moabitess in the family. And you see, there were laws in the Old Testament about associating with unbelievers, because God didn't want them to be dragged away after other gods. So it's a legitimate concern, but for some reason it didn't bother Boaz, because he knew this woman, although she had grown up as a Moabite, had embraced the true God of Israel, and it was okay to be around her. So the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar mine own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. Now this was the manner in the former time in Israel concerning redeeming and concerning changing, for to confirm all things. A man plucked off his shoe and gave it to his neighbor, and this was a testimony in Israel. So plucking off your shoe is a sign of completing the deal. But there's a little more to it. Let's go to, let me see, Deuteronomy 25. Flip back a book, a couple books. Deuteronomy 25, verse 7. We'll read a little bit more about this particular transaction, plucking off the shoe. It's actually rather humorous, truth be told. Deuteronomy 28, or 25, verse 7. I'll actually start back in verse 5. If brethren, Deuteronomy 25, 5. If brethren dwell together, and one of them die and have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without or outside the family unto a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her and take her to him to wife and perform the duty of an husband's brother unto her. And it shall come to be that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of her brother which is dead, that his name be not put out of Israel. Verse 7. And if the man like not to take his brother's wife, sort of like that near kinsman we just saw, didn't want to marry the widow. If the brother like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate unto the elders and say, My husband's brother refuseth to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel, he will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Then the elders of the city shall call and speak unto him, and if he stand to it, and say, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders, and loose his shoe from off his foot, and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, so shall it be done unto that man that will not build up his brother's house, and his name shall be called in Israel the house of him that hath his shoe loosed. So it gives a whole different meaning to, hey buddy, your shoe's untied. It's much more intense. So taking off the shoe is, in Ruth, it almost looks like it's a sign for closing the deal, but it's really an indication that the fellow would not carry out the responsibility of a relative to marry the widow. So that's how they closed the deal. Therefore, going back to Ruth 4, therefore, verse 8, the kinsman said unto Boaz, buy it for thee, so he drew off his shoe. Now he didn't get his, Ruth didn't come in there and spit in his face. They'd sort of softened it a little bit, but he did take off his shoe, basically saying, I abdicate, I give up my right to the widow, I'm not going to marry her, I'm taking my shoe off. And Boaz, verse 9, said unto the elders and unto all the people, you are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead on his upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren, and from the gate of his place you are witnesses this day. And all the people that were in the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. And then they made this great statement. The Lord make the woman that is come into the house, into thine house, like Rachel and Leah. Those are the two wives of Jacob, from whom the sons of Israel came, which led to the 12 tribes. The Lord make the woman that is come into thine house like Rachel and Leah, which two did build the house of Israel. And do thou worthily in Ephratah, and be famous in Bethlehem. And let thy house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bare unto Judah, of the seed which the Lord shall give thee of this young woman. So boy, things have turned around. Instead of being a woman in a faraway country who was a widow living with two other widows, she has now come back to the land of the God of Israel, the land of her father's family. She has a husband who is not only a believer in the true God, but is a wealthy man who has chosen to put her under his protection. So, verse 13, Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went in under her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And the women said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. So Naomi also had a family now. And he shall be, this grandson shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life, and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. And Naomi took the child, and laid it in her bosom, and became nurse unto it. And it gets better, verse 17. And the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, there is a son born unto Naomi. And they called his name Obed. Now look at this. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. So Ruth went from being a widow in a pretty hopeless situation to being the great grandmother of King David in the Christ line. Because there's this line from Abraham all the way through to Jesus Christ, where God maintained the bloodline to fulfill his promise that the Messiah would come out of the line of Abraham, and later on that it would come out of the line of Judah. Then later on, there will come out of the line of David. And here is continuing the bloodline down to David. And there's two women mentioned in the bloodline of the Messiah, which we'll read about in a minute. Both of them, people that came from unbelieving, idolatrous backgrounds, who trusted God in impossible circumstances and saw a turnaround. This is Ruth. The other one is Rahab. Maybe we'll read about her next time. Talk about another incredible turnaround. Because in both cases, they were in totally impossible situations. Rahab's is very different than Ruth's, but she was also in an impossible situation. But by trusting the true God and being smart and being tenacious, she turned it around. So it doesn't matter if you're a woman who's a widow and your land is in famine, or if you're a woman in a city that's about to be destroyed, as Rahab was. God can bring you victory if you trust God. God can bring you a turnaround. So let's read a little bit here. Let's read the rest of this. Verse 17 again. The woman, her neighbors gave it a name, saying, "There is born unto Naomi, there's a son born to Naomi," and they called his name Obed. "He is the father of Jesse, the father of David." Okay, so Obed was the grandfather of David. So Ruth was the great grandmother of David, and Naomi was the great-great-grandmother of David. They ended up in the Christ line. Amazing. Verse 18. Well, actually, Naomi didn't, because Naomi was by marriage, but Ruth did. Sorry, Naomi was not there by blood, but Ruth was. Verse 18. Now, these are the generations of Phares. Phares beget Hezron. Hezron beget Ram. Ram beget Aminadab. Aminadab beget Nashon. Nashon beget Salmon. Salmon begat Boaz. And Boaz, by Ruth, begat Obed. Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David. Let's go to Matthew chapter 1. And again, we'll pick this up next time. And what do we decide? The 9th and the 23rd in November we'd meet? Okay. Okay. So Matthew 1. And by the way, I really appreciate Brian keeping our website up to date. So if any of you miss or review any of this, he always puts it up there. So let's go back, verse 1. Matthew 1:1. The book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac begat Jacob. Jacob begat Judas and his brethren, or Judah. Judah begat Phares and Zarah of Tamar. Phares begat Esrom. Esrom begat Aram. Aram begat Aminadab. Aminadab begat Naasson. Naasson begat Salmon. Salmon begat Boaz of Rahab, the first woman mentioned in the line. And Boaz begat Obed of Ruth. Okay, actually, Rahab was before. Rahab was Boaz's mother. I forgot that. So his mother was a Canaanite. Didn't grow up as an Israelite. She grew up as an unbeliever, but turned to the true God. We'll read about her next week. So the idea of marrying a foreigner wouldn't be so scary. Right. It's like Americans who only lived in one little town in the middle of the country and never talked to anybody from another country. They're a little panicked. But if you live in a place where there's a lot of foreigners and you got a lot of foreign relatives, they don't scare you as much. That's just common sense. That's the way life is. Well, Boaz, his mother was a foreigner. So marrying a foreigner didn't seem so scary. So we'll read about Rahab next week. Maybe I should have done that first, but I don't mind being a little out of order. But talk about turnarounds. That's what we're talking about. Because we all have challenges in life. We all have great victories and we all have great challenges. And they're different for everybody. But just because you have a great challenge doesn't mean you're defeated. We're not kidding when we call them opportunities to believe God. It's a chance to look to God and trust Him and see what doors He can open. Because we can do a lot with our brains and our thinking and our planning and our education and our Googling. We can figure a lot out. And that's good. But there's stuff God can do for us that's way, way beyond anything you and I can figure out. So do all your Googling, planning, thinking, educating, investing, saving. Do all that. But at the same time, have great confidence that God's going to come through for you no matter what's going on. So Heavenly Father, I thank You for these wonderful, wonderful saints, for the joy it's been to be in Your Word today. And may we have a great week of trusting You, expecting Your blessings, seeing Your victories in all that we do. In the days ahead, may we just see more and more victories, more and more peace in our hearts, knowing that You'll be there. And may we have the joy of reaching out to others to help them also walk with you. Thank you for that. And a great week ahead, a great month ahead, and a great life ahead, looking forward to the return of your Son. In his name we thank you and pray. Amen.